Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 10:09 a.m. on Monday, May 13th, 2024. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stat, Co-Chair Edgman, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Cronk, Representative Ortiz, Representative Cohn, myself, Co-Chair Foster. Reminder, if folks can mute their cell phones. We do have to go to the floor, I believe, at 10:30, so we'll go as far as we can. Some of us are supposed to be in another meeting, so if we start to lose too many people, we might have to cut it short. But we left off the other day with the HB 400. That was the Correspondence Study Programs and Allotments. We did have a motion on the floor, which was to move it by Representative Stapp. And we are in discussion. There was an objection, and we are in discussion. So is there any further discussion before we go to the question? Representative Hannon?
I'm wondering if a motion to table to a time certain would be in order.
Object.
We have an objection. I think that was a question, or was that an actual motion? And maybe if you wanted
to put it out. If it would be easier to address it, I will put it in a motion form. I move that we table House Bill 400 to a time certain, and that the
point of order
10:40 or later today. Because, and then if I was speaking to my motion, there are a number of bills that I don't think there's much dissent or need to vote on that we would be moving.
When you move to table, there's no discussion.
Well, that's why I asked it in a question form, and then I was asked. Right.
Also, I don't think
a
procedural.
The motion on the floor is not preempted by a motion to table.
So this is correct. So there is a motion. I was going to suggest that we allow folks to talk about it a little bit, but there is a motion, and it is non-debatable. So with that, motion to table to a time certain, 10:40 p.m. I think is what the time was.
No, a.m.
Oh, a.m. 10:40 a.m. Okay, so that's another 28 minutes.
Right.
Brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 10:13 a.m. We do have a motion on the floor to table to a time certain HB 400 to 10:40 a.m. The motion is not debatable. Madam Clerk, if you would please call the roll.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Cronk.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Colomb.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
4 yea, 6 nay.
So in a vote of 4 yeas, 2 6 nays, HB 400 will not be tabled. We have a motion on the floor, and that is to pass out HB 400. We're under debate. We had a objection. Is there any further debate? Representative Hannon.
I believe there are still several policy questions to be discussed and potential amendments, and I think that we're not ready to move 400 out. I think it will only create delays at the floor in this form, and so I'm going to have to vote against it this morning.
Okay. For the discussion, Representative Ortiz.
And speaking to the motion before us, the co-chair from Dillingham raised the issue of the amount of time that we've had to look at this particular bill before we move it out. And so Representative Hannah's motion, I think, is a response to the recognition that this bill needs some more consideration. If it's not going to happen here, it's going to extend the amount of time that it takes to move it forward on the floor. And so that's why I'm in support of the motion.
Okay.
Or opposed to the motion, sorry.
Okay. Further discussion?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Benjamin.
I'm going to move to send the bill out of committee. And I've had an opportunity to look at the bill a little bit more closely. It's my belief that, and it's, you know, I'm thinking about House Bill 307 on the floor right now. We're never going to find the perfect solution. And this one is simple. Perhaps you could call it elegant or inelegant, however you want to phrase it. But I think there is a willingness to get this through the body at this point. It's temporary in its duration. It possibly could save us a special session at the moment. And I think we need to take action. There will be discussion on the floor. I get that. And I will listen with open ears on the floor. But that's my comments. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
The objection is maintained. So with that, Madam Clerk, if you would please call the roll on the passage of HB 400.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Galvin. Representative Cologne.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
7 yay, 3 nay.
So on a vote of 7 yay to 3 nay, the motion to move out from House Finance CS for HB 400. And I believe that was version R, Representative Stapp, is that what your motion was for?
Yeah, motion was, just to restate for the record, move HB 400-33-LS157 -R as amended from House Finance Committee, Mr. Okay. Co-Chair.
So HB 400 CS version, which is 33-LS1571 -R, has been moved out of House Finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And if folks could be sure to sign the committee report. And we're going to, because of the shortness of time, I'm jumping right into the next bill, which is Senate Bill 205. That's AHFC authority to acquire the building. We're going to have an introduction, invited in public testimony, review the fiscal note. And if it's the will of the committee, we can move the bill. So I would like to ask the sponsor, Representative Kaufman, as well as the staff, Ms. And Torkelson, if you could please come to the table, put yourself on the record, and present the bill.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, James Kaufman, Senator for District F in Anchorage. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation owns and maintains 1,600 low-income housing units that serve low-income Alaskans around the state. For years, Alaska maintenance personnel have relied upon shipping containers, key housing properties to meet storage needs for operations. Not only are these containers inefficient, but they're also risky as they have become attractive targets for vandalism, break-ins, and theft. AHFC has identified a maintenance facility and warehouse in Penland Park, East Anchorage, across from Northway Mall to meet its needs today and on into the future. AHFC identified the property through a competitive RFP process, and through the entire purchase of future maintenance costs will be funded through federal funds that the AHFC has in hand. The legislation puts up sideboards with a not-to-exceed purchase price of $8 million. The purchase of a warehouse in Anchorage will allow AHFC to more efficiently plan for jobs, be able to store more inventory, effectively stage materials, and be able to deploy personnel and equipment to service properties around the state. As a final note, AHFC is statutorily required to obtain legislative approval to purchase buildings for their own use. That said, AHFC will still have the flexibility to walk away from the deal if negotiations fail. With that, my staff, Emma Torkelson, is happy to briefly cover the bill's two sections, and then Stacey Barnes is here with AHFC to provide with any further detail should they be desired. And I want to thank the committee in these busy days for hearing this bill. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'd also like to note that we do have, or should have, Mr. Brian Butcher, CEO of HFC, Mike Singleton, Director of Operations for HFC. And with that, Ms. Torkelson, if you could introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman. Briefly, the sectional Section 1 amends uncodified law to authorize the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to purchase the building at 700 Braga Street in Anchorage, Alaska, for an amount not to exceed $8 million. Section 2 then sets an immediate effective date. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Before we go to questions, I'd like to invite Ms. Stacey Barnes up. She's Director of Governmental Affairs with HFC. If you could come up, put yourself on the record. Thank you for being so very patient. I'm not sure which day it is that you've been here, I think 5 days now or something like that, but thanks for sticking it out there. So with that, Ms. Barnes.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stacey Barnes. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Public Affairs for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I'd like to thank Senator Kaufman and his staff for bringing this bill forward to you. In the interest of time, there is a great deal of information about this property that we are hoping to be able to enter into negotiation for purchase in your packets. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you have, but we do see that this 700 Braga facility would be very important to helping us maintain our existing public housing stock all across the state. Be a terrific benefit. We'd like to purchase it using federal funds that we have in hand, and that is an authorized use by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions and also speak to the fiscal note if you'd like.
Yes, if you could walk us through the fiscal note, and maybe if you could cite the component number, date, and control code.
Mr. Chairman, James Weedle is our budget director. He's also online to answer any questions about the fiscal note, but we're looking at OMB component number 110, and the control code is WHSTF. The fiscal note includes $200,000 in operating costs using federal funds, and it also includes $8 million of federal funds for the acquisition of the property should the legislation move forward.
And what was the date on your fiscal note again?
Mr. Chairman, it's May 9th. 2024.
Oh, okay. And did you say the control code? I thought I heard something different. I've got May 9, but your control code again was?
WHSTF.
That was OMB components?
110.
110. Hmm. Does everybody have the same control code?
I have that GU.
I've also got the GU also.
I don't have GU.
But you said the amount again?
Not exceed $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not looking at the same fiscal note that you are. However, in the other body, pardon me, I now have it. Thank you. Control code GUIUI.
And that's the one we have also. Is this the more recent one then that we have? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is dated May 9th of 2024.
Okay. And you mentioned the services of $200,000 also?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, utilizing federal funds.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. I'd like to jump right into public testimony before we take up questions. So I'm going to open public testimony on HB 205, which is HFC Authority to Acquire Building. Is there anyone in the room who'd like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online who'd like to testify? Okay, I don't see anyone. If anyone would like to submit written testimony on the bill, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. And with that, I'll close public testimony on SB 205. And with that, I would like to open it up to questions for the committee. Do we have any questions? Representative Galvin?
I just have a comment. You've answered so many questions over the last 3 days that I want to say thank you. Thank you for this work. I know not only the state, but I've heard from many constituents, although we haven't heard them on the line today. I've heard from many who would like to see more done in housing. One of my questions was around why not build more units with the $8 million? And now I better understand that this federal money is not meant for that, but it is meant to support building new units and the upkeep of the many units that you've already built and plan to build. So I just wanted to say thank you for your work on this. I appreciate the sponsor and share that I do think that this is going to be very good for the state, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hedgman.
Are you ready for motion, Mr.
I think we might have a question, Representative Cologne.
Thank you. Through the chair, so where's the money coming from to maintain this building? Is this going to be federal funds too, or is it coming out of operating costs?
Through the co-chair, Representative Cologne, yes, the operating costs would be paid for utilizing federal funds. Thanks.
Okay. Well, if it is the will of the committee, I would entertain a motion, Representative Benjamin.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that Senate Bill 205, version 33-LS1178/A.8, be moved from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Okay. Seeing no objection, SB 205, which is 33-LS1178/A.A, moves out of House Finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And if we could be sure to sign the committee report. Thank you very much, Senator Kaufman and Ms. Barnes and Ms. Torkelson.
Through the chair, thank you very much to you and the committee. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Well, I don't hear any bells yet, so I'm going to jump right into the next bill, and that is SB 170, which is extending senior benefits, repeal longevity bonus. And we've got with us Senator Kawasaki as well as his staff, Mr. Griffin Sukow. And if you could put yourselves on the record, and we have heard this bill before, and if you could give us a brief recap, and then we'll jump into public testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Finance Committee. Scott Kawasaki for the record, Senator for Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and Badger. Pleased to be here presenting Senate Bill 170 on behalf of the Senate. Senate Bill 170 would just simply extend the senior benefits program. As many of you know, this senior benefits program would aid over 10,000 Alaska seniors and families who are age 65 years and older. Currently, a person would have to be at 75% income limits, 100% income limits, or 175% of income of the federal poverty level, reflecting a direct check monthly somewhere between the range of $76 and $125, $250, depending upon in what level poverty zone they are. This currently benefits, like I said, 10,000 Alaskan families. There were, at last note, 172 in Nome alone, 337 in Bethel. Fairbanks had 1,028 families, and Matsu had 1,526. There's nearly 4,000 families in Anchorage that also benefit from this. This is extremely important bipartisan legislation that's had a great bipartisan history and support. Helping our seniors who've themselves had a lifetime of helping to build this state. It, again, is an income-based senior benefit going to those folks who need it the most. I would yield the floor to questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Senator Kawasaki. Before we go to questions, would like to take up public testimony and also address the two fiscal notes, or one fiscal note. And then we'll go to amendments or questions and then amendments. So with that, I will open it up. I will open it up to public testimony, SB 170, and that is extending senior benefits, repeal longevity bonus program. And so with that, is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online who would like to testify? Okay, seeing none. If folks would like to submit written testimony for SB 170, which is extending the senior benefits program, you can do so by emailing housefinance@house.finance@akleg.gov. So we'll go ahead and close public testimony on SB 170. And we do have one fiscal note, and we've got Ms. Deb Etheridge, or we've got Ms. Courtney Enright. If you could put yourself on the record and walk us through, maybe cite the OMB component number and control code number.
Good morning. Courtney Enright, Legislative Liaison, Department of Health. So we're looking at OMB component number 2897, control code PONNR. And you'll see that the expenditures starting in this year are $23,542,000. And you'll see a slight increase into future years. The department assumed a 1% increase in utilization going out per year.
Okay, so with that, do we have any questions either for the sponsor or for the fiscal note? And then we'll take up the two amendments that we have. Any questions? Seeing no questions, we'll jump right into the amendments. And we've got two amendments. First by Representative Stapp. Representative
Stapp. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move Amendment 1.
We have an objection, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, members of the committee. Amendment 1, really simple, just adds a sunset date back into the bill. The reason I'm offering Amendment 1 is the bill has changed at many different times in the last two decades, really since the bill has been in inception form. There are fixed amount of payments in the bill that the future legislatures may want to actually go back and revisit because they're fixed amounts, and that doesn't necessarily bode well for long-term inflation. So I think it's good that we have a sunset that future legislatures will go back and see if maybe they need to either increase the amounts or maybe they need to change the program. But that's just my read on the bill and the program. That's probably in its fourth or fifth iteration since the time. So.
Okay, thank you. Do we have comments, Representative Ortiz?
A question on the amendment. We're looking at amendment. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong amendment. I withdraw my question.
Okay. So we're on amendment number 1, and that is to add a sunset date of June 30, 2029. Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, you've selected some of the reviewers and not others. Can you explain that?
Representative Stapp?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, this is how Ledge Legal drafted it. So I can certainly call my staff to the stage, but I, like I said, I asked the Ledge drafters to draft me a sunset date, and this is what they gave me. So I assume it applies to the entirety of the bill, but if it doesn't, then should probably figure that out. So
I wonder, Senator Kawasaki or staff, that might be a very technical. Feel free to come up just in case there are other questions also. I don't see anybody with Ledge Legal online. Representative Josephson, I don't see anybody from Ledge Legal online. Is there anybody on Ledge Legal for any of the other bills? I don't hear anyone. And it looks like Senator Kawasaki, Representative Josephson. Any further discussion on that?
Well, I just saw a gesture that may not get me where I need to go. Yes, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, what is your opinion of the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I defer, of course, to the members of the August Senate or House Finance Committee. I will say that this has been in effect since 2007, unchanged. The fiscal note reflects increments over the next, 6 years, as was mentioned earlier, to allow for a larger number of people to be in the pool. It's just up to policy whether we'd like to see this now. This was an amendment that was accepted by the Senate Finance Committee to remove the sunset completely. But, of course, it's up to this committee.
Okay, any further, Representative Hannon?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, when you say it's been unchanged since 2007, does that mean the individual monthly payout benefit levels have been unchanged or just the eligibility?
Senator Kawasaki.
So through the chair to Representative Hannon, the senior benefits program has not changed since 2007. It was adopted, but the limits and the income limits that are tied to the federal poverty guidelines are adjusted annually through regulation.
Follow-up. So the eligibility has been adjusted, but since 2007, we haven't changed the monthly payout to individuals.
So through the chair, again, to clarify, it's dependent upon how many people enroll, and it could change every year, and it could, we could have big years and small years depending upon how many applicants they get. So, but the underlying bill and the underlying regulations have not changed.
Mr. Sukow?
Through the chair, for the record, Griffin Sukow, staff to Senator Kawasaki. To Representative Hannon, I would also say that the actual amount of money, so the $75, that those different levels are subject to legislative appropriation. So if the budget allows for more money to be given to seniors, then they will get more money.
And just so folks know, we do have someone from Ledge Legal who will be calling in a moment. Any further questions, Representative Hannon? Okay. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The chair. Senator Kawasaki, is this sunset date the first time there's ever been a sunset date associated, or is that a normal process that as we're looking at this bill, sunset dates move along with it?
So through the chair, Representative Ortiz, there have been sunsets for this program all the way back since it was a longevity bonus back in the 70s. When it was replaced with the Senior Assistance Program and the Senior Care Program and then the Senior Benefits Program, it was generally given large lengths of time. And so the standard was an eight-year time period. Again, I would defer to the committee, to the will of this committee's.
Representative Cologne.
Thank you, through the chair, to sponsor the amendment. I guess I would ask why 2029? What are your concerns that need to be revisited in 2029?
Representative Stapp.
You want me just to wrap up, Mr. Co-Chair, or you want me to say that?
We do have somebody from Ledge Legal in case anybody wanted to follow up on that one. So, but go ahead.
Through the chair, to Representative Cologne, and I'll answer the other questions, too. The date really doesn't matter to me. I mean, I just took the average inflation rate of the last 3 years, and because it's been substantially higher than the last 10 years, I figured I think it's a five-year sunset. I don't really care if it's a six-year sunset. I will say that the purpose of it is the program's always had sunset dates in it. There were bills that I had this year, like CAMA and General Relief, that had no sunset dates in it, that had hard numbers. I don't believe the legislature will ever go back and look at a program that has no inflationary adjustment built into it unless we have sunsets. I think I've demonstrated that in bills that I offered this year. So I just think that, hey, at some point, this $125 or $70 a month, that sounds great now. I mean, I actually think it's relatively low. But if you don't have a sunset of the program, it's going to be that number for probably now until the end of time. So wasn't trying to be controversial, though. I mean.
That's good. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I think there is an adjustment, right? Because it's not only in regulation, but there's also the federal poverty guidelines that are going to change. So per se, there isn't an inflation adjustment in here, but in actuality, there it will be adjusted as time goes forward.
Okay. And does anybody have any other questions for Ledge Legal while we've got them here? Okay. So, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Just so I'm clearly understanding, and it is the will of this committee is where we're looking at the particulars. I understand that, and I fully support that. But could Senator Kawasaki tell me again what the action was taken in the other body in relationship to this item before us?
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, they removed the sunset completely. And I will just note for the folks who are watching that there is a 2% escalator in the fiscal note. It actually does say that the department or the division assumes participation levels continuing and the historical 2% increase. So the historical 2% increase looks like it is already in statute. So just an FYI.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no further questions, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair, Foster. So my understanding is, just to be clear, we may be having fluctuation in terms of percentages of one's individual household income, but the actual payout is not changing over the years. Is that correct? So the
Senator Kawasaki.
So yes, through the chair, Representative Galvin, we provided the committee with an updated information and fact sheet that was updated January 2023. It did have some examples of where those have changed because the federal poverty limits have changed each time. So there's in the third page of that same document, there's also the total number of recipients has also changed over time. So for instance, and they haven't gone necessarily up or down or up. In fact, in 2017, there were 11,322 applicants for senior benefits. In 2022, there were only 8,988. There's lots of different reasons why a person may or may not be requesting a senior benefit. I guess the underlying policy is, do we want to make sure that senior benefits are available for those folks who need it the most? Thank you, Mr.
Through the chair, if I may, absolutely, I support this program and support this bill. I'm just trying to understand better what we're hearing from the member from Fairbanks, that perhaps if we relook at it in 5 years, then we might ensure that the monthly payment amount, if it needs to be adjusted upward, for example, if there was inflation, that maybe that would happen. But I'm just trying to make sure I'm understanding the way the template is as to how we do currently come up with these numbers, if it is a something that would that we adjust, or is it something that a 5 year or an 8 year, it wouldn't really matter.
Senator Kawasaki.
So through the chair, the way I understand it and the way I read the fiscal note is that this program is already in place. It's budgeted annually based on the numbers, the look back. So there's no real reason, unless a person were to not fund it in a future budget or a legislature were to decide not to fund the senior benefits program.
Thank you.
It's already built into the program.
Representative Stepp, is this wrap up?
Yeah, I'm going to do wrap up here. I'll do wrap up just so I can actually clarify a couple of things that people are confused on, Mr. Co-Chair, if that's through the committee. Okay, so I'm going to read the sponsor statement of the bill about the fixed amount. The Alaska State Legislature assistance can range from $75 to $250 per month for eligible seniors. Okay, those are fixed amounts. Okay, as far as the 2% projected growth in the fiscal note, that is because Alaska has an aging population, so they project 2% more seniors per year benefiting the program. The third point is the federal poverty limit. The qualification certainly adjusts at the federal guidelines. So, i.e., more people or less people may qualify for the program. But the amounts of money that we give out in this program do not change unless the legislature shortchanges the appropriation as appropriate. So that's how the program works. It's in the sponsor statement. So, again, the purpose of the sunset, it's always had a sunset. Hey, if you think that we should pay $76 to $250 from now until the end of time, then don't vote for the sunset because the legislature will probably never look at the bill. If you do think that maybe somebody should come back and look at this program every, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, I don't really care about the number, then vote for the amendment. Thank you.
Okay, is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Okay, the objection is maintained. We are on amendment number one, which is set a sunset date on the senior benefits bill. With that, Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Coulomb.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Pass.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Pass.
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
5 yay, 5 nay.
So on a vote of five yeas to five nays, amendment number one has not been adopted. So I have heard the bells. We're going to go ahead and recess. I believe we are going to be allotted some time this afternoon to come back to finance. So it is my intent to come back and finish up with amendment number two as well as amendment number one to amendment number two. And then after that, we'll see what the will of the body is. And then we've got so this afternoon SB 259, compensation for certain state employees, SB 151, missing and murdered indigenous people report, SB 34, citizen advisory commission on federal areas, SB 183, workers' comp benefits guarantee funds. And so with that, we're going to go ahead and recess at 10:45 a.m. to go to the floor. And with that, we are at recess. Testing. Okay, calling House Finance back to order. Time is 12:01 p.m. on May 13th, Monday, 2024. And we left off with, we had not passed out amendment number one. We're going to amendment number two. And Representative Hannon, would you like to introduce your amendments?
I will. I move amendment number two to House Bill, to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 170.
Check.
Thank you for the clarification. That is Senate Bill 170, which is extending senior benefits just for the public. And Representative Hannon, if you'd like to walk through your amendments.
So what this bill does is takes a bill that we've heard in this committee before, which is House Bill 196, and it stuffs it into the bill. We're at the stage in the session where these efficiencies, although not the best sausage making, are necessary. This bill, the broad-based categorical eligibility expansion of SNAP, helps feed Alaskans. And we need to help more people out of poverty by implementing broad-based categorical eligibility. It's a federal flexibility that has been adopted in 42 states and two territories. This allows the state to increase SNAP income limits from 130% of poverty to 200% of the poverty standard. It does not mandate that they go to 200%. It allows them to develop new regulations that could expand up to 200%. It also allows the state to waive SNAP's asset test. And that asset test is one of those places where a lot of people get disqualified from SNAP currently because they own too many vehicles or an extra snow machine. Broad-based categorical eligibility also allows the state to phase down benefits for working families as their income rises. SNAP is a major economic driver via groceries in rural communities because every dollar spent in SNAP is spent in Alaska and has been shown to generate for every dollar spent, we generate $1.70 in economic activities in communities. Broad-based categorical eligibility decreases the administrative burden that the department has and has the potential for cost savings for the state. I ask for your support.
Okay, thank you. And just so folks know, we do have Deb Etheridge, Director of the Division of Public Assistance, available for questions, as well as Hillary Porter, Deputy Director, Division of Public Assistance. And so with that, we'll go to questions. Do we have any questions or comments on amendment number two? And I believe there was an amendment to an amendment, possibly, Representative Staff.
Yeah, Co-Chair Foster, I'll go ahead and move amendment one to amendment two, and then I'll ask the questions department.
Okay. We have an objection. Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So what amendment one to amendment two would do would be to reduce the 200% of federal poverty line increase to 150% of federal poverty line increase to these broad-based category eligibility SNAP program. And there are a lot of reasons that I think this is probably a wise decision, but I certainly have questions that I will ask the department, but I'll take questions from the committee and then defer for time being.
Okay. And we could probably go right to the questions for the department. Go ahead, Representative Staff.
Yep. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair to Director Etheridge. So last time we heard this bill that's now in the underlying amendment, I asked the department if they could determine how many new individuals would they expect to increase if the department went to 200%. So were we able to determine what our expected volume of increase would be if we increased the eligibility of the program to 200% of the poverty line?
Ms. Etheridge, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, this is Deb Etheridge, Director for the Division of Public Assistance. And while to Representative Staff, while it is complicated and difficult to project the number of individuals that would apply for and take advantage of the SNAP program at 200%, we were able to discern that approximately 11.5% of Alaskans are under 100% of the federal poverty level, and 13.6% are between 100 and 199% of the poverty level. And I need to just acknowledge that these are statistics that came from the Kaiser Family Foundation in 2022.
I'll follow up, Mr. Co-Chair, through the chair to Director Etheridge. I like percentages, but you have a number? Like, so if 11%, in theory, that's what, 70,000 Alaskans, you add another 3,000, that's another 10,000-ish? Does that sound right?
Through the chair, representative, that sounds about right. I need to get my calculator out. Okay. And through the chair, representative, we and our preliminary numbers of individuals participating in the SNAP program for the March of 2024 was 77,197 individuals.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
All right.
Through the chair to Director Etheridge. So I think the asset reduction and broad-based category eligibility is probably a good thing. I think it makes the department's processing time holistically as a whole probably more efficient. My fear is we have 77,000 people in the program now, and even though this amendment has an effective date of next June, you could in theory see a jump of an additional 10,000 applicants immediately. So I guess when the department had its second SNAP backlog, how many applications were backlogged after it had to process through the first backlog? Do we know? Through the chair.
Through the chair, representative. Either applications or renewals within the backlog, and the beginning of the backlog, it was approximately started out at around, I believe, a little over 8,000, but I was not actually the director during that time.
Okay, that's fair. And my last follow-up with the director, Mr. Kocher.
Representative Staff.
Yep, thank you. Through the chair. So the maker of the underlying amendment, before I move my amendment, said that this bill does not require the department to go up to 200% of poverty line. It would be up to the department's discretion. So my question to you is, in the event that this bill were to pass, would the department set the eligibility for SNAP at 200% of FPL?
Chair, representative, I think the department would likely set the percentage at 200% of FPL, and the reason we would do that is because there's some proposed rulemaking around TANF, temporary assistance for needy families, that if it goes through may require states to set at 200%, and we wouldn't want to, duplicate work if we could avoid it. But it's truly up to the will of the committee.
Yeah, and that sparked one last follow-up. Sorry, Co-Chair.
Senator?
Yeah, through the chair to Director Etheridge. That was my understanding as well. So thanks for putting that on the record, that you would indeed go to 200% of FPL. I guess the only thing that I'm interested in is, in the event that this passes at 200% of FPL, broad-based category eligibility, could you tell the committee with high confidence that we will not have another SNAP backlog next June? Through the chair.
Through the chair, representative, I would take measures to avoid a situation that we've been experiencing here in Alaska, and that could potentially mean that I would request a phased approach for implementation.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So I will say that I think 150% is a good start for a phased approach for implementation, and I'll yield to the questions from the committee.
Okay, Representative Pandon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Ms. Etheridge, when you gave us some statistics in response to Representative Staff about the percentage of Alaskans in eligibility categories, I believe you said that 13% of Alaskans are between 100 and 199% of federal poverty guidelines. Was that correct?
Through the chair, representative, that is correct, and that's from 2022 Kaiser Family Foundation.
Right. So I believe when Representative Stapp used some numbers from that, calculating how many more people would be eligible, there's already 30% of those, because our eligibility is at 130%. So all of that 13% of Alaskans, some of them are already eligible because they are between 100% and 130% of the federal poverty guidelines, correct? So they're not, they wouldn't be added on. They're already receiving or eligible for this benefit.
Through the chair, Representative, that is correct.
Thank you. And I guess I'm going to speak in opposition because I don't think a 20% addition to us gives us enough range and captures enough Alaskans. And especially hearing that the TANF program is likely to go to 200%, that's going to create this for the department. Now you've got to do eligibility for people in two different programming levels. So when TANF goes to 200% of federal eligibility and our SNAP is at, if this amendment prevailed, 150, we've now got two different evaluations that need to be done. So I'd like to see them coordinated and would ask to support voting against Amendment 1 to Amendment 2.
Okay, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Etheridge, it looks like for the bill in question that would be merged into the extended senior benefits bill, there was one fiscal note that would cost the state's treasury $69,000. And so am I right that if we pay $69,000 out of our treasury, we could help 10,000 more Alaskans pay for food?
Through the chair, Representative, if the amendment to merge the broad-based categorical eligibility into the current bill on the senior benefits program, that would require additional fiscal notes for the division, from the division.
Follow up. Through the chair, Ms. Etheridge, I have in my possession the what I think is the only fiscal note for the bill represented by Amendment Number 2, the one that we're discussing. Is there an additional expense if this amendment merges into the senior benefits bill, other than the fiscal note in the BBCE bill?
Ms. Etheridge?
Through the chair, Representative, the senior benefits SB-170 has a fiscal note, and the broad-based categorical eligibility has two separate fiscal notes. I believe that the division or the department prepared those fiscal notes in the event that this amendment was adopted, however, would not have presented to the committee the fiscal notes until after the amendment was adopted. That said, they're largely identical to the original fiscal notes that were carried along with the broad-based categorical eligibility bill. And forgive me if I'm not able to watch, so I'm not sure if I'm understanding the question or answering correctly.
Representative Josephson?
Yeah, thank you. I didn't see, I thought I had a stapled document. I don't. So, Mr. Chair, the bill that is represented by Amendment 2 for this bill, the Senior Benefits Bill, has two fiscal notes for BBCE, and they seem to total General Fund $69,000 and General Fund $71,000 for a total of about $140,000. So let me ask it this way. Ms. Etheridge, if I'm right that there are two fiscal notes, my question would then be, if the state spends $140,000, could we assist in feeding 10,000 more Alaskans?
Through the chair, Representative, correct. We could feed several more Alaskans.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Really briefly, I don't know if this would be Ms. Etheridge or the maker of the original bill, but I seem to remember in the presentation that quite a few other states were at 200, and I just wanted to get clarification on how many other states are at the level 200%.
For the record, this is Deb Etheridge, Director for the Division of Public Assistance, and Representative Galvin. I believe those statistics came from the maker of the bill. But if that's not correct, I can follow up with the committee.
Representative, would you like Representative Mina to?
Yeah, I would. If you wouldn't mind, Representative Mina. How many other states are at 200?
If you and your staff could both put yourselves on the record.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, for the record. Representative Genevieve Mina, representing House District 19.
Katie Giorgio, staff to Representative Mina.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin to answer your question about other states that have 200% federal poverty level in their BBCE. I'm going to go through the states. I don't have the number offhand. California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, D.C., Florida, Hawaii, Kentucky, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New York, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Washington, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. So if you can do the math on these states.
More than half. But okay, thank you. That gives me a good sense that there are quite a few. And then the second question I have, and this may be for Ms. Etheridge, and this is the last question, is this is federal pass-through dollars as I understand it. So all the money that's going to be going toward food and then, of course, into our communities comes from federal pass-through money. But also, is there some portion of that, those dollars, so should we increase the role that would be going to the state for the administration of this as well?
Through the chair, Representative, you're correct in that the food stamp benefits are federal and the federal pass-through funds, and the administrative additional administrative costs to the division or the department are included in the attached fiscal note.
And just for the record, that was Ms. Etheridge, Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Through the chair, that was my final question, just to note that. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions before we go to the representative staff? Oh, Representative Croak.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I tend to agree with Representative Staff here. I am more worried about getting a lot of phone calls that we don't have our SNAP benefits. And I believe kind of phasing in, I'm totally okay with it if we phase this in, but I'm really I had a lot of phone calls from people that could not get the SNAP benefits. I'm really worried about we're just going to set this up for another one of those events, and that's a lot harder on people. Hey, we just don't have it. Help me. So I'm kind of leaning more towards, you know, what Rep. Stapp is presenting here.
Okay. Reps in the Stapp.
A wrap-up now, Coach?
Wrap-up.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, the number of states that were listed off, you know, my argument would be I don't think many of them had a year and a half SNAP backlog. Again, my fear, and I think the reason I'm offering the amendment is I feel like it would be very unwise, given the fact that the department did clear the SNAP backlog, but in doing so, they created a backlog for Medicaid and about half a other dozen programs, and I do not believe that the department will even clear those backlogs until next year fully. And if it takes them till next year to clear those backlogs and then we roll this out in June, my fear is at 200% of FPL, we will just be creating another SNAP backlog. And the reason I'm offering the amendment is because I'm just asking the committee to consider a little caution and time. And if it works out, have no problem going up to 200% later. But given the circumstances that the states had in DPA, I just think it would be unwise to move that quickly. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. House Finance back on record at 12:21 p.m. We are on HB 400. And so with that, Representative Stapp has given wrap-up. And with that is the – and we are on Amendment 1 on HB 400. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
The objection is maintained. Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Ortez?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Colomb?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Four yay, six nay.
So on a vote of four yay, six nay, amendment number one to amendment number two has not been adopted. That takes us back to amendment number two. And any further discussion on the underlying amendments? Amendment number two, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, just for the sake of time, I'll be quick. I'm going to be maintaining my objection. I do have a question for the maker of the amendment if they did check with Ledge Legal about the single subject rule on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. There was no Ledge Legal memo returned with the amendment request.
Okay. Maintain my objection.
Okay, the objection is maintained. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we are on amendment number two, which is by Representative Hannon. Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Seven yay, three nay.
So on a vote of seven yay to three nay, amendment number two has been adopted. That takes us back to the bill itself as amended. And do we have any further discussion on the bill? Seeing no discussion, I would entertain a motion. Representative Edgman, if yes. You made a motion, you might want to include that we have both attached and forthcoming fiscal notes and also give Legislative Legal the authority to make technical and conforming changes if that is the will of the committee. I've got it written out here if you want to.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great. An attached explanation, please. Right. I move that I can read the co-chair's handwriting. Right, Mr. Co-chair, I move that CS for Senate Bill 170, version 33-L119/S, is moved out of committee with forthcoming fiscal notes and individual recommendations, and to give the Legislative Legal the authority to make technical and conforming changes. And I might have, Mr. Co-Chair, not said amended in that motion, but if that could be included.
Okay.
Object.
We have an objection. Representative Stapp,
would you like to speak to your objection? Yeah, real quickly, and then I'll remove it, Mr. Co-Chair. I really hope that I will be wrong a year from now. I don't think I will be, but I just want to put on the record that in the event that we go into another snapback lock and the state cannot issue the benefits, that would be very unfortunate, and I remove my objection.
Okay, the objection has been removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, CS for Senate Bill 170, which is 33-LS1119/S, is moved as amended from House Finance with attached and forthcoming fiscal notes and individual recommendations, and Ledge Legal is given the authority to make technical and conforming changes. So with that, if everyone could be sure to sign the committee reports. Thank you very much, Senator Kawasaki, Representative Mina. And we're going to jump right into the next bill. We'll probably keep going until we maybe hear bells, or if we go for a while, we'll take a break maybe. After the next one, which is SB 151, Missing and Murdered Indigenous People's Report. If I could have, I'm sorry. I've got a script that says otherwise. Next up, we have Senate Bill 259, which is compensation for certain state employees. I'd like to ask Senator Avi Gray Jackson and her staff, Mr. Jeff Stepp, if you could please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and begin your presentation. Also available for questions, we've got Laura Timko, Chief Policy Analyst with OMB, Jessica Geary with Legislative Affairs, Stacey Bentley, Human Resource Manager, Kate Sheehan, Director for Division of Personnel, and Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Court System, and finally Noah Klein, Attorney at Legislative Legal Services. So with that, thank you very much, Senator L.V. Gray Jackson.
Senator L.V. Gray Jackson, representing District G in Anchorage. I want to thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, and your committee members for hearing this bill this afternoon. As I mentioned, I'm Senator L.V. Gray Jackson. I'm Chair of Legislative Council, which unanimously approved the motion to introduce this legislation as a committee bill at the Legislative Council meeting on February 28th of this year. Bottom line, Senate Bill 259, Compensation for Certain State Employees, is a technical cleanup bill. Representative Josephson's House Bill 226, which was short-titled Pay Increases for Certain State Employees, and was passed by the legislature in 2022, included an amendment from former Representative Steve Thompson to ensure that state employees who are not covered by a bargaining unit receive salary adjustments in line with those negotiated with the supervisory bargaining unit. However, due to the Department of Law's interpretation of that section, detailed in Legal Services Memo included in your bill packet, the Department of Administration has been unable to implement these salary adjustments for approximately 2,800 exempt and partially exempt employees across legislative, executive, and judicial branches. Senate Bill 259 clarifies and confirms the original intent of the 2022 legislation by providing clear authority to the Department of Administration to adjust salaries as intended. This legislation simplifies the process by amending AS 3927011M, an uncodified law, to ensure that salary adjustments can be made efficiently without the need for repetitive legislative intervention. A couple of substantive changes were made to the original version of Senate Bill 259 in the Senate Finance Committee. First, retroactive pay provisions were removed, which eliminated the need for supplemental funding. Additionally, the bill now includes a section which removes the existing salary cap on the pay scale of the Chief Administrative Law Judge. This adjustment is necessary to attract and retain qualified individuals for this important role. In your bill packet, there is a letter of support from the Commissioner of the Department of Administration, which explains this much-needed provision. Finally, on Thursday afternoon, we learned that the Supervisory Bargaining Unit reached an agreement in their negotiations with the state. Based on that agreement, OMB has submitted a new fiscal note. Alexi Painter from Legislative Finance and Laura Temko from OMB are available to explain if necessary and answer any questions that you may have about the fiscal note. Mr. Vice Chairman, Senate Bill 259 fulfills a commitment that the legislature made to state employees a couple of years ago. This bill stands as testament to our commitment to fairness and equity for exempt and partially exempt employees and reflects our appreciation for their service to the state of Alaska. We also have people with expertise in HR from all three branches of government who are also here and available to answer any questions you may have. The bill drafter, as you mentioned, Mr. Vice Chair, Noah Klein, is also available to answer any questions. And if you'd like, my staff, Jeff Stepp, who is my staff for Legislative Council, he can read through the sectional analysis if you'd like. Again, I'd like to express my appreciation to you, Mr. Vice Chair, and your committee members for hearing this very important bill. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
Okay, thank you. I think first we're going to jump over to public testimony, and so I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony on SB 259, which is compensation for certain state employees. And if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. Again, house.finance@akleg.gov. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? And I believe we have a Mr. Kevin Higgins in the room? I don't see. Okay. So with that, is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online who would like to testify? Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on SB 259. And if, again, folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. We do have one fiscal note, and that is from OMB. If we could have Laura Timko, if you're in the room, Laura, if you could put yourself on the record and walk us through OMB's fiscal notes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Laura Timko, and I am staff to the Office of Management and Budget. Before you is a fiscal note from OMB. It is OMB Component 0. It's a statewide fiscal note for all branches of government, so the executive, court system, and the legislature. The control code is BBURO, and it is dated 5/10/2024 at 7 a.m. So for all branches of government, all fund sources, the fiscal note is $22,022,900. And that is broken down on the second page in the analysis by fund source, department, and branch of government. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. I think we also have an amendment that needs to be distributed first. No, I think Mr. Anderson, if you could maybe please come up and walk us through. If you could put yourself on the record. And maybe that's already incorporated in the bill, I think. Is that maybe I'll have you explain. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. Before the committee members in their packet, you should see an amendment number one marked 33LS1475 version R.1 by Klein, distributed this morning in your packets. And that would be the amendment that would move in order to move forward on this amendment. Is it not available?
I don't see one. Do other people have a copy in there?
I don't, Mr. Chairman,
Pennon?
I think it was accidentally placed in Senate Bill 183 file. They both have compensation on their label.
Okay, folks can go to, it looks like it's at the bottom file there. And let's see here. Okay, there it is. And we'll just take a moment to make sure. Does anybody not have it?
No, found it. It's in that.
Okay. It should be for SCS for Senate Bill 259 and Amendment 1 by Foster. Okay, looks like my name's on it, so I'm going to go ahead and move amendment number one. Is there any objection just for purpose of discussion? Okay, thank you. We have an objection. Mr. Anderson, if you could walk us through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of this amendment is to better reflect the final agreement that was closed by the supervisory unit. This bill was created during the process of negotiations throughout this last legislative cycle, and just recently the SU or supervisory unit closed, and in part of their closing they included what would be known as a step increase for all of the employees that are included in the SU. But because exempt employees and the rest of employees that are not covered in a collective bargaining unit, there's a difficulty in translating that step increase that they received into what would translate into that same sort of pay increase for those rest of those employees. This amendment would include or calculate a percentage increase of approximately 3.38, equivalent to that step increase that they would be receiving. So that's the first bulk of the amendment. The second portion of that amendment, the way the negotiations closed was on July 1st, every employee gets that 5% bump, which is what the current bill reflects. And then on July 8th, there is the implementation of that step increase, because that is in line with payroll and the way payroll rolls out. This amendment institutes that 3.38 equivalent step increase or percentage increase on July 8th to reflect as closely as we could the mirrored, the best sort of comparison to what the SU closed at in the negotiations. And then finally, the last one, in subsections O and P of the amendment, This includes what was negotiated by the supervisory unit for the 2025 changes or increases and the 2026 increases. So the SU agreement is now reflected as closely as possible in the bill if this amendment passes. Mr. Chairman, that is a brief explanation of what the amendment does, and we do have Noah Klein, the author of the amendment, and also Alexi Painter available as a Legislative Finance Division to talk more of the technical nature.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions on amendment number one? On the one hand, it's kind of technical amendments, and that's why I agreed to put it forward, but on the other hand, it's a little bit substantive. And I think the bottom line is, and maybe Mr. LeBol, would you mind, the way you phrased it earlier, I thought made a lot of sense, and if we could just put you on the record for a quick moment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what it does is it just mirrors what was the final negotiations agreed upon for the supervisory unit, and the substantive effect of it is a 3% step increase.
And you had mentioned that these negotiations are handled, I think, differently because it's by legislation and negotiations are handled differently. If you could maybe touch on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The exempt employees do not participate in contract negotiations, so they have to be handled through legislation. And the traditional way of dealing with that is to mirror the supervisory union's contract negotiation agreement.
Okay, thank you. So with that, do we have any questions of the committee representative?
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So I'm just clarifying what was said before. Well, you said it was a 3% step increase, but I thought there was a 5% and then a 3%. So is it at 8%, or I guess I need some clarity on
that. Mr. Anderson?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb, you are correct. The overall increase will be 8.3% with the 5% that was already reflected in the bill, and then the inclusion of the amendment adding that additional 3.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. Were you saying you wanted to say something else, Mr. LeBol?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just wanted to clarify the difference between step and range increase. The range increase is in the underlying bill. The step increase is in the amendment.
Thank you. Okay, any further discussion? Want to go to the sponsor, see if you've got any comments before I see if there's any objection on the amendment? Any thoughts on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I support the amendment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, is the Representative Pronk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I remove my objection.
Okay, the objection has been removed. So with that, hearing no further objections, Amendment Number 1 to CS for Senate Bill 259 has been adopted, and that takes us back to the bill. We went through the fiscal note, public testimony, and the amendments. Is there any further amendments or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edgman, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 259, version 33-LS1475-R, as amended, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay. Seeing no objections, Senate Bill 259, which is 33-LS1475-R, as amended, moves out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And if folks can sign the committee report, thank you so very much, Senator Gray Jackson. Do you have any comments?
I just want to once again say thank you to you, Mr. Vice Chair, and your committee members, and also for moving this bill out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you for the work that you've done. So. Okay, well, I think we should probably take a moment to check in with our speaker to see what the plan is for floor, and if we've got some time, then we'll come back to this. So I'm going to take a recess at 12:41 p.m.